Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Gotta talk all things college football, including a hiring, a firing, and a rumor out there about an extension to a major coach at a major program. We'll get all these things in with our next guest. That would be Brian Fisher, Athlon Sports college football columnist. Brian, Jody Mack here. How was your New Year's? I hope well.
It was spent watching football, which is the best kind of New Year's.
I have zero problem with that. And then you spin it off into New Year's Day, and it isn't exactly the same because the college football playoffs are bigger and they didn't play on New Year's Day this year. But even New Year's Day is still pretty cool, isn't it?
New Year's Day is fantastic, and I always look forward to it. It was a little bit different this year, obviously, but I can't wait till the next New Year's when we can really, get back to celebrating college football like it's meant to be played right around that January 1st date.
Then let me go there next. We have lived through a COVID year, and it has affected all of us in all of our lives in many different ways. For a guy like yourself, covering college football, how it has affected college football plays very strongly into your life. How do you think, and it's such a widespread question because it came down to conferences and universities. It isn't like Roger Goodell making the calls and guiding the National Football League through something. It's so different on college football. In a general way, how would you say college football handled getting a season done during a pandemic?
I would say it handled it as best as it could. I think there were some, when you look back, you look at certain outbreaks that occurred with various teams, how leagues conducted themselves. I do think there was obvious room for improvement. And I think you look at, especially at the pro level, with the NFL being able to get through as we go into this weekend, likely all 256 games. There were some protocol breakdowns. There were obviously issues with these college presidents in terms of when to start, when to stop, when to postpone, and I think that is after everything gets done and everybody can catch their breath a little bit. Does need a little bit of a revisit, but I think overall from the players who put up with so much just to get in practice, just to get in a lot of these games. I mean, they really went through the ringer this year, and a lot of them made it through, and I think that is a testament to what kind of hard work they were able to put in, following all the guidelines that they were given by their teams. And I think for administrators, obviously, you look at the balance sheets and you're seeing a lot of red, after this year, as everybody is after 2020. But I think overall, I think college football, the fact that we were able to get to this point where we only have one game left after tonight, and it is the national title game, and we did get in some of these major bowl games, I think it is at least a minimum of a mission accomplished at this point for college football.
That's a good way to describe it. Mission accomplished, mostly accomplished, I would add. If you were like me, who thought that those who critiqued the college football playoff committee for putting Ohio State in, having only played five regular season games and their championship game in their conference, and debating on whether they did or didn't deserve a spot in the Final Four after going undefeated, how gratifying do you think it was for the people on the committee and those who defended their decision to watch Ohio State take out Clemson last night?
I think if you were to give those committee members some truth serum, I think they would be ecstatic. You know, at the way things kind of shaped out. With the college football playoff and really the rest of the New Year's Six, you know, bowl games. I mean, you look at Georgia and Cincinnati playing in competitive games. Those guys, were ranked together for a good chunk of the season at 8-9. Certainly, there was some controversy over Iowa State getting in ahead of Indiana, ahead of Coastal Carolina, who both probably had a better resume argument to get in there. But the Cyclones today took care of business against Oregon. So I think the committee overall, especially with that top four, is certainly looking back, patting themselves on the back, and toasting to another job well done. Which, let's face it, it wasn't much of a decision at the end of the day, that they had to make. Yeah, was there a little controversy, from Texas A&M fans out there? Sure, but at the end of the day, there was a pretty clear cut top four, really dating back to September and on through the season. And I don't think there was much controversy. Certainly now, after seeing that Sugar Bowl and seeing that faux Rose Bowl down there in Dallas.
I thought there was more controversy after the fact out of remarks made and actions both made by Dabo Swinney, who I happen to be a fan of. I like Dabo because I think he brings personality to a sport that is personality handicapped to begin with, and it almost needs to be because you talk about amateurs and not professionals. But Dabo does a nice job of adding personality, but every once in a while, personality can make a major mistake. And him putting Ohio State in on his vote on the coaches' poll at number 11 was ridiculous, and he ate a lot of crow for it from the social media critics out there. I didn't have a problem with him taking as much grief as he did. I thought he brought it on himself. How about you?
Absolutely. And this is not the first controversy. He has certainly stuck his foot into his mouth and kind of created out of thin air, or at least perpetuated. When you could have had a story die down, he keeps adding fuel to the fire. And that's Dabo, frankly. You know, he's not going to change. This is who he is. That is his personality. And as much as it has been interesting to kind of see him change from really that kind of underdog figure, really into the Goliath of the sport, along with Nick Saban. I mean, you talk about one of the most successful coaches out there. The way he has transformed from the aw shucks little Clemson. Clemson is the juggernaut now. It's one of the three elite programs in college football right now. And I think when he does have these mistakes, it really does magnify, not only what he said, but kind of the position that the Tigers are in now. And so I think it has been a fascinating journey to see him, these last couple of years in particular, kind of go from that underdog where he can take those shots, where he can make those claims. But at the end of the day, usually he's being able to back it up. He was not this week, and you kind of see him eating the crow, as you said.
Brian Fisher, Athlon Sports, college football columnist, our guest here on CBS Sports Radio. All right, Brian, I'm going to give you a chance to be honest up front and maybe conciliatory a little bit. You weren't one of those guys who actually got sucked in by Zach Wilson playing a couple of good games and overreacted to Justin Fields having a less than stellar Big Ten championship game to say that Wilson may have caught and or surpassed Fields in as far as eligible draft status coming up this offseason, did you?
And well, I think it's an interesting conversation because, I think there is obviously the clear-cut number one in Trevor Lawrence. And I think that at least because the sample size was so small, it really did magnify Justin Fields' flaws. He pressed a little bit this year. And when he was playing loose, when he was playing free, as we kind of saw, certainly after that big hit that he took in the Sugar Bowl, he was letting it fly. He wasn't pressing too much. And I almost think because – the team only played five regular season games. He almost went into every game, trying to ensure that his team got to the playoffs. So he was almost under pressure to really blow teams out. And I think that, allowed some uncharacteristic mistakes. But, when you really do drill down into the details with him as a prospect, he ticks all the boxes. He's got the size. Certainly brings the added element of mobility. Smart guy, can diagnose plays at the line. And I think, really has kind of firmly established himself all the way back to high school as kind of that number two guy to Trevor Lawrence and a guy with a tremendous upside. Now, I think the thing with Zach Wilson is, There's still going to be the injury history that I think scouts are going to look at pretty closely, and that might scare some teams away. But the way he has played, the way he has thrown, he ticks off a lot of those boxes as well. And so I think that he's at least closed that gap into where there is a conversation. Now, whether you're the Jets or somebody, picking in the top five or top 10, I think the interesting thing that in my mind that's come out with this NFL draft season, is really Trey Lance, because he was kind of out of sight, out of mind. His stock has probably dropped the most out of anybody, and you have seen kind of Zach Wilson supplant him as kind of that consensus number three guy.
Now, let me ask you a question about Trey Lance. It's funny that you went there. I'll tie that into Justin Fields, too. I've taken calls. I've gotten tweets from people who say, Jody, you're way too high on Justin Fields. Ohio State quarterbacks stink. No Ohio State quarterback has ever mounted any. And I keep trying to explain to people it's completely and utterly irrelevant. There hasn't been a all-pro quarterback come out of LSU for 40 years since Burt Jones back in the 70s. It didn't keep Cincinnati from taking Joe Burrow number one last year, nor should it have. And, oh, by the way, he looked pretty damn good until he went down with an injury. So I think that's ridiculous. Will the NFL teams be scared off on Lance at all by the fading of Carson Wentz this year in Philadelphia, because they come from the same school, same program? I've even heard some people compare them in their game is similar. Do you think Carson's downgrading in Philadelphia will have any effect on the way Lance is viewed?
I think maybe in the back of some guys' minds, it might just a little bit, but he's always going to be a guy that has the tremendous physical attributes that you look for in a signal caller. He checks off all of those boxes, and playing in his system, at North Dakota State, that which has produced these NFL quarterbacks, I think that does help him. But at the end of the day, in terms of the physical tools, he's got more upside than a Carson Wentz. And we all know NFL scouts, all the front offices, all the coaches, they love that word, that upside word. And he has probably the most of any of it coming out of the FCS level in several years now. And so I think he's still a good prospect, a guy that, assuming he checks off all the boxes in terms of the interviews and all that, probably can still go in the top 10 in the draft. But at the end of the day, teams are still going to reevaluate not only what they saw from him last year, but understand that he's still a little bit more of a developmental guy compared to a Zach Wilson, compared to a Justin Fields, who let's phrase it, that they're probably going to get thrown into the fire a lot earlier than him. But if you're sitting out there and you're Carolina and you have time, you have want to build things the right way, I think he could end up fitting with a guy like Matt Rhule. So it all comes down to really kind of the flavor of the month, depending on where your draft slot is. And I don't think Carson Wentz's struggles, although that might get talked about in draft meeting room, ultimately they are going to evaluate Trey Lance for Trey Lance. And I think they're going to like what they see ultimately.
They should, because a predecessor should have really no evaluation impact on a completely separate player. Doesn't matter that they came out of the same school or not. I'll give you one other quarterback that I do like ahead of Trey Lance. All right, not Fields or Lawrence, but I would rate him ahead of Zach Wilson as well. And he may just walk away with the Heisman. From the people that I'm talking to, it sounds like that the Heisman voters are actually going to go non-quarterback this year, and Devonta Smith could walk away with the hardware. But if I had a vote, I would cast it for Mac Jones. I think he's had that good of a season. He's gone above and beyond Devonta Smith just because the quarterback must. He's got to be able to spread the football around. He's done a nice job of that this year. An Alabama quarterback has never won the Heisman. There's never been an Alabama quarterback I would have voted for. There is one now, but I don't think he's going to get it. Who's going to get the Heisman? What kind of a pro quarterback do you think Mac Jones is going to be?
I think it's going to be an interesting evaluation with him, especially in light of Tua Tagovailoa's struggles a little bit, just because of, he does have all these weapons, and you kind of got to remove him and evaluate the quarterback for all of those throws. And, in terms of the arm strength, it's not, light on fire type of arm strength that can throw it down the field like a howitzer. He does diagnose plays, at the line very well, and I think, makes the right read. Has really nice touch with his passes, and I think overall he has certainly kind of entered that conversation to be a late first round type of guy. But you know, really, what helps him more than anything is really there's not that many guys behind him, and so that's going to elevate his draft stock. Obviously, I know Kyle Trask, another Heisman finalist, is being talked about. But you know, when you talk with scouts about him, you know, they mentioned that, you know, frankly, both him and Mac Jones not the most mobile of guys, and I think because you do lack that nowadays. If you are a true top tier first round quarterback, you got to be able to move around the pocket. Got to be able to escape pressure, and those guys can do it some, but not to the level that I think the NFL scouts want to see. And so he's going to be a really intriguing and interesting evaluation because, you know, like you're saying, he's probably throwing footballs to the Heisman winner. He's got another probably first round talent out there as well at wide receiver. And he's been phenomenal this year. But I think there's going to be some skepticism as that draft evaluation process really continues and guys start to drill down into him. And so he's still probably the number four guy on most boards. But as we all know, when you get past the season and you really start to dig into these guys, maybe that ends up changing with Mac Jones.
Yeah, I'm a bigger fan than most, but I'm okay with that. And I didn't move off Justin Fields, and now I'm quite happy that I said he, for me, should be a lock at number two. I think it's a two-quarterback franchise-changing draft, Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, and then a drop-off, and the drop-off to me comes to Mac Jones next, but that's just me. All right, did want to fire these two by you. Tom Herman gets the heave-ho from Texas. I feel badly for Tom Herman. I think he's a very good coach. Whoever gets him next to coach their program is going to get a hell of a coach. It's the tough. It might be the toughest program in America to try and run with the kind of pressure that's on down there in the Lone Star State. I had been reading, hearing people whose opinions I trust know it better than me had been saying he seemed like he had dodged a bullet, and then out of nowhere, here comes the bullet today and wastes him. Were you one who was surprised by his ouster in Austin?
A little bit. I mean, it was only December 12th where Texas kind of made a big deal that they put out a statement really saying he was going to be the head coach in 2021. Even I had to clarify it again just to media members to say yes, no, he is going to be our guy. Obviously, they blew out Colorado in the bowl game, and you think the pressure is definitely on Tom Herman to win big in 2021, but. Really all indications were as frosty as the relationship was with him and the athletic director, him and some of the boosters, he would make it almost as a lame duck type of coach. But, things can change. Money obviously talks at a place like Texas. It's a very unique place in terms of the booster culture there. And he simply wasn't Chris Del Conte's guy. I think that relationship had certainly soured the last couple of years and given everything that had gone on in 2020. And, Tom is not exactly the easiest personality to get along with either. But, at the same time, I think he really did elevate, the floor of that program from where it was under his predecessors. And, he's got Texas in a position to win big. But I think everybody kind of looks at the recruiting slipping a little bit these last couple of years, having to go through the staff changes after last year's 8-5 record. It really has not gone all that great for Tom Herman in close games against games that Texas should be winning. And, I think, frankly, the administration and a lot of the key guys down there in Austin said, if we can upgrade, let's just do it now. Why would we go through another year? It's going to be costly to make this change, but let's bring in some fresh blood. Let's get some momentum going into 2021 versus being pretty stagnant. With Texas A&M on the rise in that own state, certainly Alabama and Ohio State recruiting well in the state of Texas now. So I think there were a lot of issues, but no doubt about it. Pressure is on Steve Sarkisian going forward, and I think it's going to be an interesting move to see where Tom Herman goes from here.
I was going to say, you want to take a speculatory shot at where Herman could land. He can certainly take his time finding another job because he's getting a whole bunch of walking away money from Texas. Take a year, just wait, see what opens up. Or do you think he'll jump into the fray for a couple openings that follow?
Yeah, I think, you could maybe take a year off, go be an analyst or go tour the country. If you do want to kind of take that time for yourself, that's always an option. I think everybody looks at USC, certainly coming up as a potential opening in the near future. Whether that might be an option for him as well, he does have ties out to the state of California as well. So that could be a potential landing spot down the road. I think you also look at maybe doing a little bit of a job swap with Steve Sarkisian. Nick Saban's going to need an offensive coordinator here, and I think Tom Herman, the way he's been able to really adapt a lot of different systems, certainly bringing in what Urban Meyer did originally at Ohio State. He is able to incorporate some pro style concepts, integrating RPOs. I think that would be an intriguing look. If he were to wind up back in Alabama as part of that kind of Nick Saban coaching rehab tour that seems to be working wonders really for everybody that kind of comes through there. So it's going to be interesting to see. He's going to be a big name, I think, on the periphery of a lot of these coaching searches. And you never know. The NFL is always out there as well. And I think with the interesting guys like Matt Campbell and even Jim Harbaugh, I think there could be some interest out there and some more openings at the college level.
I was going to get to Harbaugh as my last question. Report today that Michigan has put a 5-year extension on the table for Harbaugh, and he hasn't signed it. He hasn't turned it down yet. It's just kind of sitting out there. They were very disappointing this past year. You could say almost as disappointing as the year before. I know he's a big name, and they made a major commitment to him, but let's be honest, he hasn't exactly blown them away at Michigan. Why do you think Michigan is, if they're aggressively putting a 5-year offer and an extension on the table, I would say that's almost desperation with Harbaugh. Why do you think that is the case?
Yeah, I think this is obviously this has been in the works for several weeks now, and I think if you look at what Michigan wants to do, they don't want to fire Jim Harbaugh. I think the relationship with the administration there is good. I think the AD and everybody in Ann Arbor really respects Jim Harbaugh, but understands that changes need to be made. And with this contract extension, it'll be for less money. It will be certainly a little bit easier for the school to kind of get out of, if they do need to pull the ripcord down the road. And at the same time, they're going to give him the opportunity to make changes to that staff. He's already let Don Brown go. There's going to be a new defensive coordinator coming into town, probably retooling some other positions as well. And so I think at the end of the day, this is really a case of let's give this one more try with our famous alum who has done good work in the past, and see if he can make it work. And then if not, in 2 or 3 years, we'll be able to make another evaluation and kind of go from there. But no question that the program has slipped. But Jim Harbaugh knows that more than anybody. And I think if anybody wants this to succeed, this whole experiment, it is Jim Harbaugh. He loves this job. He loves being in Ann Arbor. And if he can't make it work, then I think you've got to really question how good that Michigan gig is.
Brian, great stuff. Appreciate you coming on board. Glad to hear you had a good new year. Have a great championship week as well.
Absolutely. Good to be on with you.
My pleasure. Ryan Fisher from Athlon Sports, their college football national columnist, here with us on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.